live around the world. This is Paper Cuts with Brad and Jay.
We'll just get this out of the way here. Thanks for joining us on Brad's show.
Yeah, thanks for coming to my show. I did not say shenanigans. Okay.
Are you drinking already?
No, I've just got water. Always looking smooth, aren't you?
Yeah, I do it. I try to clean it out for the show. Look, one of us has to. Come on.
It's a cover reveal party with Ross Jeffrey and Dark Lit Press. We are live.
Well, hello there, everyone. How's everyone doing? It's a random Sunday afternoon, so of course, Paper Cuts.
It's Paper Cuts.
Feed, right? I mean, most inconsistent scheduled shows ever. That's us. But because we're doing a Sunday afternoon show at 2 p.m. our time, that means we're using our international superstar status, and we're
talking
to people from other countries. I believe we have three countries representing in this episode. Pretty cool, right? What's up, everyone? My name is Jay. Over there is Brad. Before we get too far, I do want to mention, because a few people reached out to me, we did have a show scheduled a couple weeks back with Ashley Irwin to talk about her new release. We are going to make that up, reschedule that. Brad over there was, you know, had it coming out of every orifice possible. So we couldn't have that show, unfortunately.
No one needs to know all that.
But here we are today with a special edition of Paper Cuts. It's a cover reveal party. Exclusive, I should say. Cover
exclusive.
Reveal. Yes. Joining us today, the writer of the book we're talking about. You may know him from the Juniper series, or maybe Only the Stains Remain, or you know, that creepy guy looking in your window at night sometimes. That's he's on the other side of the big, big pond. And he's the reason why we're doing this at 2 p.m. our time on a Sunday afternoon.
Interrupting the NFL Sunday.
Exactly.
Come on.
Everyone, Ross Jeffrey, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, boys. Thank you very much. Thank you.
It's been your first appearance since season one. What season are we on, Brad?
Four?
Four?
Are we on four? Four.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
We do short seasons, by the way. episodes.
Just for the record, we're looking like 10 or 12 episodes per
season. Yeah, we're like Netflix seasons. Yeah. 10 or 12 episodes, we're good.
Also joining us today, one of the, I guess you'd say one of the hardest working people in the world of publishing. Because every time you turn around, he's released a new book. You know, it's brain behind Dark Lit Press. Say hello to Andrew Robert. Hello. Welcome to the show.
What's going on, Andrew?
Hey, thanks for having me. It's really exciting.
Before we get too far, we do plan on having Andrew come back at a later date and talk all things dark.
All these books. Yeah, all these books. That's not even all of them.
Oh, look at this.
So many.
That's like what?
An eighth? That's like a quarter of them, maybe.
Nice.
So yeah, at a later date, we'll have him come back. We'll talk all things Dark Lit Press.
He's fancy today, in the background. Look at
it. Yeah, today it's all about the dude above him right there that's already drinking, hitting the bottle. This is what Paper Cuts does to people. Bring your own drinks, get drunk, and let's do this. It's a reveal party. What book? What are we talking about, Ross? What is this book? What's the title of this book?
This is The Devil's Pocketbook. And for fans of your shows, they would have known when I was last on all those seasons ago.
All three people.
Literally, it's like a year and a half, but any season. So
it's probably like, what, 19 people now that watch this show. And
that's a very generous number.
Well, you know.
I don't know. I think you should throw in some shade there.
Well.
I think we're at 22.
Yeah. So the last time I was here, I was talking about that book and that I'd finished it and I was shopping it. And yeah, it was with Tor Nightfire for absolutely ages on their open submission. And I don't mind saying that because it was there.
Put them on blast.
For absolutely ages. And then it was stuck there in limbo. So I decided to pull it after, I don't know, probably about 2 years. And then we shipped it. Well, I shipped it off to Andrew to kind of read at Dark Lit because I was loving what he was doing. And then, he loved it and wanted to take it into his kind of Dark Lit family. And that's where we are now.
Who had the pictures? Did you have pictures, controversial pictures of him? Or do you have controversial pictures of you to land?
I can neither confirm or deny any of those reports.
Just want to make sure for the record.
That's talk for the after show.
Yes.
That's the OnlyFans stuff.
So why did you want to go with Dark Lit Press? It sounds like you went to them first after tour.
Yeah. So I don't know if anyone's been looking at Dark Lit. They are lit. Everything in my social media is full up of all their stuff, all their books. And Andrew, I knew from before as well. So, you know, we'd spoken before and, you know, he is one of the hardest working people in this industry. And he's helped me with like doing like little kind of things for social media that I needed and all this kind of stuff off his own back. Didn't need to do it, but he's done it. And just the content that he's put out so far as a kind of newish press is impressive. And when we were in discussions about me sending it to him, also the authors that he was kind of bringing on board, I was like, I want to be part of this. And then we're here and I'm glad he liked it because otherwise he'll be waiting for someone to pick it up.
I'm glad you said kind of newish because it hasn't been very long, right, Andrew? Like how long has your press been out now?
Oh God. You know what? It's been in the works for 2 years, but it's been actively going for about a year now.
For about a year. In this long line of books he has already for us.
Right. A lot of learning.
let's go your way now. So what made you decide to go ahead and take this book from Ross and get it moving along?
First of all, I've been a big fan of Ross's work for a long time. So this was really exciting for me when he approached me about reading this manuscript and, getting my opinion on it and how do we move forward. So that was just exciting in itself to get an opportunity to read something from Ross for consideration. But, the story itself, obviously, was incredible. It's gone through a little bit of a transition since it's been in my hands, which is kind of exciting too. So I get to go through another a reread here right away, actually, while I'm in the midst of formatting. So, I love the style that Ross brings. You know, it's that bleak. It's kind of weird. It's like this bleak yet really exciting story, right? It's very compelling. I have a hard time setting the story down. I was reading his newest manuscript he sent my way, and exact same thing, just had a really, really hard time putting it down. But it's just so bleak, emotional, but it's not the typical, like I said, it's really, really hard to put down. So
how far did you read into it before, like, I want this book? Did you read the whole thing?
Well, I read the whole thing. I couldn't stop. Okay. I couldn't stop. I definitely read it. I think I read it in like one evening, one and a half evenings. Something
really?
Like
that. No spoilers, because I'm about 45% into it. So no spoilers.
Yeah. So it was good. I'm glad I actually get to do the reread again here since nice. We've kind of read it through an editor and that. And it's just interesting to get that second round. So
Ross, has much changed with it since you sent the tour as to what's going to be the final product, or is it pretty much the same for the most part?
So we used Ben Long to do the editing, and like he did a marvelous job. I think a lot of it is kind of tightening. It had a previous editor, but I think where I've had to do things for certain kind of things in the background, some of the kind of connections were a bit lost throughout, so we just tightened that up a little bit. It's the same, like nothing's changed in the story. It's the same as it was, just little bits here and there, like some bits cut out because it was a bit too wordy, or I like to go on a little preamble. So we tightened a few bits up. But it's still got all the kind of hideousness in it and all of that. So I'm excited because it, like when I was going through the edits, I was just like, yeah, I'll give you that. That's good. And then I was like, taking it out. And then there were some bits where I was like, no, I'm not doing that. But that's
a bit of give and take.
Yeah, and that's what it is. And I think sometimes where people get things back from editors, they're just like, oh, they must know, so I'm going to change it. And I was just like, no, I'm not going to do that one. but most of them I did change because it made the story better and tighter. And it kind of gave it a little bit more kind of propulsion in places where it was a little bit slow. But yeah, it's the same story, same stuff. But yeah, it was really good.
You put your foot down and say, I'm a Bram Stoker Award nominated author and I'll do what I want. Is that what you did?
No, I barely even recognize that of my thing because I'm still like, I can't believe I am one. But I was just like, I don't like to, you know, I didn't storm off. I didn't go, excuse me.
Shut Brad, the computer down.
Put the teaser picture up there, Brad, just to make the audience drool a little bit and get make excited. Them drool. Yeah, just a teaser picture. Make sure you pick the right one, though. Don't ruin the show.
Yeah, don't ruin the show.
Yeah.
All right, let me pull it.
The way they can get ready for it. And
Brad's feeling the pressure now.
I know.
Feel the pressure's on, guys.
Sweat's forming on his forehead there. While he's doing that, Ross, you want to give us a little bit of insight of what's happening in this book? No spoilers again, though, but like just of it.
I think they said it was what the lighthouse meets the witch. Is that what someone said?
Kind of. I think that's accurately details it. There's a couple in it called Eric and Lara, and they head to Paul Perro, which is a place in Cornwall in the UK, and they go there to kind of get away from their kind of daughter's ghost, because this is not a spoiler, like, you know, straight away. Right. She'd passed, and they've gone there to kind of rekindle their kind of relationship and kind of get a bit of themselves back instead of being surrounded in their house with all memories of a life that kind of was extinguished. And when they get to Paul Perro, they find more than they bargained for. I'll probably leave it there because it's a bit spoilery. But I loved it. And I was talking to you, Brad, before I came on, but like, I'd actually stayed in Paul Perro about 12 years ago. And when I was there, like, so everything in the book, I have made, like, I have changed certain locations of bits, but it is all there. But it's, you know, a bit might be a bit further away than I have anticipated. But that's my doing, not I've got it wrong. I loved writing it because I knew what it all looked like and how it felt and the kind of scenery and just how eerie it was, because we kind of went in the off season as well. So it wasn't like summer and like lots of fun, and it was like sitting in the house playing ball games because it was pissing down the rain outside and stuff. So the house that Eric and Lara are in is the house that I kind of stayed in. So I knew where everything was and how it looked, and I could kind of place everything. And that's what I kind of really love about it. It is a real place. So if you read the book and you ever come to the UK, you know, go to Paul Perro and you'll kind of be in the world that I've crafted.
We have
Reed's really like fantastical in a lot of ways, right? Like when you start reading the description of the scenery, like it kind of reads almost like a fantasy book in that way. I really enjoyed that part of the story too. So.
I think as well, like I love, like with my Juniper books, like I love using like the weather and the kind of surroundings as another character as well. So like in this, like you feel like the coldness of where they are and the storms and the sea. And like, I just, yeah, it's just another level and another kind of character to the story as well.
Yeah. Do we have an official release date for it?
It's in May 23rd. Is that right?
I believe that's was it the 23rd? Yeah, it was the 23rd. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
That's Jay, I did my homework for the show, Jay. That's why.
Well, I knew that too, but I mean, for people, you know, tuning in, I had to set it up for them. Come on, Brad.
So with you visiting this location, did that make the writing experience different than, say, with Juniper or Tome, that you've been in those physical locations?
Yeah, definitely. It made it easier. Also, I'm writing in English instead of Americanisms. Uh-huh. You weren't going to poop bags and stuff. But But yeah, so it made it a lot easier writing. Yeah, just having been there, like, I'm not creating it all in my head. Like, I knew exactly what it looked like. And although I loved creating Juniper and the craziness of that world, but it was a lot easier to write knowing it and being there. And, like, you know, I've got photos of when we were there, so I could, like, look back at photos and see where things were and stuff. Mm-hmm. And also a little kind of additional thing is that the next few books I've written, so this book, the following book, I Died Too, But They Haven't Buried Me Yet, and the one I'm writing at the minute, Harvesting the Nightmare Fields, all kind of subtly link into each other. It's not they're not connected, but it's like
you're building the Ross Jeffrey universe.
Yeah, kind of. And so they're all set in the UK. The next two are set in and around Bristol, where I am. But there are certain characters that kind of are mentioned and things that are mentioned that link all the books together, which I quite like. I like that type of stuff when I read books. So I thought I'm going to stick it in there.
But, yeah. So is this the special character still in this one? Did he make the cut?
Yes.
Jay knows.
I haven't made it that far yet, so I'm getting there. I'm getting there. So, so I just want to say, Chalusky's here, so I guess we can start the show.
Yeah.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another exciting episode of Paper Cuts.
Chad gave us permission.
Yeah. So before we actually look at the cover, did you have somewhat? I know you do a lot of artwork yourself, Ross. What did you want for this cover? What did you want to put into the book as far as artwork? Tell us a little bit about the background of all of that.
So the cover, I wanted it to be absolutely banging.
Of course, yeah.
And me and Andrew were talking a while, because, you know, the original cover is of, like, I drew, like, I like to give a face to the books I write. So I'm, normally, if I'm starting writing, I'll draw something or make something up to kind of give the book a... Yeah, like a life, like it's a thing. And kind of, yeah, I just shared that with Andrew, and we were talking about kind of the feel of it. And we looked at a few artists. I won't get onto the whole AI stuff, but I also don't like, I'm not a fan of, I don't even say I don't like, I'm not a fan of heavily Photoshop stuff. It's just, as a kind of artistic person, that's something I don't really like, although I can see the art in it, doing it and all that kind of stuff. But for this, we were kind of looking up artists that could design something that looked like a work of art. And with Francois, we got someone that absolutely nailed the kind of feel of it. The kind of, because I think as well, we wanted the book to kind of show elements of the story and the kind of feeling of the book, and we got that, like, with what he's done. And like when Andrew showed me it originally, I was just like, this is absolutely amazing. I was like, I cannot believe this. And then he was like, this is just like a rough draft, like he's still got to finish it. And I was like yeah, sign me up. I was like, yeah, we'll have that. But yeah, it's just brilliant. I could never hope to have a cover that looked this good. And Andrew's kind of sorted it out and got it, and it just looks amazing. And like, I can see it in bookshops, and like just holding it will be a real treat. So, yeah.
So Andrew, what's the process when the writer like Ross comes to you and you start bouncing ideas back and forth? Do you have like a Rolodex of all these artists that you just contact to start throwing ideas out to them, or?
Yeah, I will tell you guys outright that I have people I like to work with. Okay. Francois is 100% going to be one of them now. but more than just the art, right? Like I take a lot of value in you know, hardworking people in our community that do, you know, that do more than just the art, right? Like, for example, Christina, NW Reader,
right.
I work with her so much, and I am so grateful for everything she does, because to be frank, she knows what I want. She knows when I need it, and she almost gets it right 100% of the time. You know, she's great at everything she does, and more than, and what I'm kind of getting to is when I get a book now, I'm going on Ingram, I'm going on Amazon, I'm going on multi-platforms, and she gets me a cover to suit every one of those platforms, as well as audio and everything I could ever ask for, all wrapped up in a package. Like, right. You just don't get that with a lot of artists. Francois was one of them. And I'm working with a few more that are right on par with that as well. And some that haven't been, right? So it's just, you know, I'm excited, you know, with going forward, you know, how things have been working. So,
I absolutely loved the two audiobook covers she did for the Beach anthologies. Those were amazing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I instantly was like, I need the cover. I need the whole wrap. We're switching it up. We're done. You know, I liked the original one. I had this idea that was where my first book's coming out. And, you know, not that I didn't like them, but it is night and day. It's just like, there's no competition. It's great. So I'm very happy with those. And I'm really happy with Ross's book, the way it turned out. So this will be, I'm excited for you guys to see it.
So are you coming up with the ideas yourself, or are you getting, is it 50-50 with you and the writer, or do you have writers?
Oh, I generally let the writers take the reins. So if you guys see Laura's book here somewhere, where is it? I can't, it's mirrored. Anyways, right there, Laura's book. So when they came to me about what they wanted for the cover, they had already gone through the ringer with a couple of other publishers. And they had said there was this artist they wanted to work with, but they had never done a book cover. I was really hesitant on that. Not, not having any experience with book covers, but I trusted them with it. And in the end, like, I am so thankful that I did that, you know, let them take the reins and get what they wanted, because the writer knows, they know what the audience wants. They know what their readers want. And it's important that they, you know, get it, this is their work. This is their baby. It's my job to try to market it after the fact. You know, so it's rare that they're not going to get the right thing. Right. So anyways, you know, I had Ross kind of talk with the artist a little bit, and I kind of get my points in there, what I really need, and in my experience, what, you know, what we'll need after just the art, right? So, and he nailed it. So,
I will say, with smaller presses like Dark Lit, as compared to like, you know, some of the bigger companies, you get more artwork, you get more design with the cover, you know, because if you look at, like, if you walk into, like, I don't know, Barnes and Noble or whatever a brick and mortar store is, you see these books and most of them are just big letters of what the book is, you know. There's not a lot of thought, I guess, going into that artwork for the cover. So one thing I really enjoy about, you know, some of these smaller press companies, that there's a lot of more action going on with the covers and art to, you know, get that feel for it. So
You're 100% right, Jay. And you know what? The reason for that is because we've got to sell the book, right?
Right.
So it's not enough to write the book. It's not enough to get it out there for the world to be able to grab it. But we have to sell it. And that cover is going to be what does that. Companies like HarperCollins, which by net, you know, just a quick side note, if you're reading any HarperCollins books, make sure you're not putting out any reviews or anything like that until their workers go back to work. Solidarity, brothers and sisters. back on that, though, they have dedicated teams who have built relationships over years that are going to get their books in bookstores. Like, they don't need to put in the work. They don't even need to sell it to readers, but I do. So it's important that we are investing a lot of time and effort into covers and blurbs and things like that, because that's what's going to sell it on the shelf, right? So,
and no matter what anyone says, people do judge a book by its cover. If it's got some trash paint by numbers cover that someone slapped together in paint MS Paint, it's going to look garbage compared to something, you know, an actual artist painted or, you know, photoshopped together like Christina does, or, you know, anything like that. People totally judge a book by its cover.
Yeah.
And it could be the best book ever, and they won't even pick it up because it looks like garbage.
Yeah, unfortunately. But
so, I mean, should we prolong it more? because I know Chad's on the edge of his seat wanting to see this cover.
I'll ask one more thing real quick, and then we'll reveal it. Is for the cover, did he paint it, or how did he? What was the, artistic device that he did to create this cover?
You know, I'm not 100% sure. I think that Francois has been at this a long time, and so I think that he has painted a lot of his own. Like, I don't want to say he's got stock, his own stock, but I think he has. I think he's painted his own stock images almost that he can produce fairly quickly, because like he was on it. Like, this cover was fast. He had like three different cover concepts to us in like a matter of days. And so I think that he knew what he wanted, and I think he had some of it on hand, but a lot of it he would have had to have painted. So
yeah.
To me, it looks like a hand painted cover.
Yeah.
I wonder if he's one that keeps all of the originals for himself, like, you know,
like Daniel Sarah does. Eyes.
Yes, yes.
I've gotten a cover from, can't exactly say the name. She goes by Suspiria Land on Instagram. She's huge in comic books and that. She did the cover for Reader Beware. And I actually got that, the original painting in the mail, which was really, really cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So that's going up on the wall somewhere sometime.
And just for the record, Chad, the one you've seen is different than this one.
It's fake.
It's fake. This is the cover. This one here, right here. We're looking at it.
It was rude. We got you.
Ross, right here. Are you ready to reveal the cover, Ross?
Yeah, I can't wait.
After 2.5 years, we need to see if I can do the drum roll real quick. See if I can mess this up.
I'm sure you can.
Probably. Here we go. You ready? Ta-da! Did it move?
Oh my goodness! Look at that!
Look at it! Look at it!
Look at that! That. Awesome. I mean, not really. Look at that. It still has a bit of the original concept that Ross had with the drawing.
Yeah. Let's zoom in. We'll zoom in on this bad boy.
Oh, just look at it. It's beautiful.
Look at the lettering. I didn't look at the lettering. Yeah.
I like how the horns of the pocketbook kind of intertwine with some of the letters as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm a sucker for lightning on a cover. I love lightning.
Look at that. It's just
how so is that the cabin in the book? Is that what that represents there?
Yeah, so that's the kind of cabin, and I think that was something I asked to be added. I think I can't remember clearly, but
yeah, we combined two concepts. I think he had two or three concepts that we just were like, we want these two things together.
We were like, I want that bit in there, and he was like, yep, okay, done. But yeah, I just love that kind of little light in the house. It's just
it intertwines with the lettering down below too. Nice.
Yeah, going through the letter E.
Yeah,
and what I love about it is kind of like the full wrap as well has got kind of like the stormy sea and look at that beast.
Get it.
Yeah, just like everything about it is just beautiful. And yeah, like the book's about a coming storm, and then you've got the storm, and kind of like, you know, it's not going to be a cheery number, is it? Look at that cover.
That's a good cover. So what is this thing? Is this a mermaid's pocketbook? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, so it goes by different names, but it's in the UK, it's called a mermaid's purse.
Mermaid's purse, that's right.
And but it's also called a devil's pocketbook because it looks like the horns and stuff. And I do have the original, pocketbook that I found on the beach when I was with my daughter when I came up with this idea. It's all dried now though; it's fallen to pieces. But I still got it. But yeah, and then like I kind of like had that, found it, and then I was just like trying. I was sitting in a coffee shop entertaining my children whilst we were waiting for coffees, and just came. I have always carry a pen and a pad, and I just started telling them. I won't go into it because you'll know what I'm talking about. But I just started talking about this pocketbook, and then just jotted down some notes afterwards, and that's where the story came from. But yeah, and like it's just look at that cover.
That good. It's going to be glossy, right? You're going to have like a glossy finish for the.
I think we're going matte.
Matt.
I tend to do gloss. You know, I'll leave it up to Ross, to be honest, but I tend to do gloss for all my paperbacks because I think they just sell a little bit better. People like them. People don't like to take pictures of them, but
they suck. Yeah, they trying glare, to get the glare off of them.
yeah. But, you know, it's kind of, you know, I did a poll on Twitter one day and it was like, I couldn't even believe it. It was like 95% of people preferred matte. So, but oh, all of our hard covers are going to be matte, like a matte dust jacket. Okay. So we're going
nice
all out with publications going forward. And that's to help get our books in bookstores, right? I don't know if you guys heard, but Barnes & Noble is kind of putting a thing forward that they're pretty much only doing, they're not really doing much with paperbacks, unless that got squashed. But, not just that, but why not? Like,
yeah,
it's a small investment to get an awesome book. So, yeah.
Chad wants to know if there's gum wrappers in the mermaid's purse.
There's everything in there. There's lipstick. There's everything. Like, you know, kitchen sink is in there as well.
So you're doing a hardcover edition of this with an actual dust jacket instead of it printed on there like with KDP?
Yeah, we're not going to do like the laminate case. We're going with a dust jacket on a cloth book. So
it just gets better and better.
Yeah,
I know.
Here, just take my money now.
Yeah, but you know what's funny? Actually, I think, you know, talking to like Brianna Morgan and Caitlin Marceau, they didn't want that. Like, I mean, they do want the dust jacket, but we've got a couple of options. So for their books, I think we're going to go with like the laminate case underneath the dust jacket. But okay. It's kind of split with my authors right now. Like, you know, one of them doesn't care at all. Just wants the book out.
Just give me the book.
Put it out there. Make people buy it.
Can I just say, Tim Meyer is like so laid back. He's just the easiest guy in the world to talk to.
Just do whatever. Okay.
Hey, Ross, I want to do. Sorry, Tim. I want to do this, this, and this. He's just like, do it. Don't care.
Right? Just release.
He's the only guy I've ever talked to. Only author. He's just been like, do whatever you want. Really? Great dude.
So Jerry has a kind of question for you here, Ross. Mm-hmm. I love Ross's approach to placing characters through a grinder. Starting with parents who lost a child, what toll did it take on you as a parent yourself, and did you pull back from your own sanity?
I never pull back. it's just...
He leans in.
Leans into the chaos and the trauma. This one was quite, it was, if people have read my books, someone messaged me the other day and said that I write grief horror, which I've never heard before, but maybe they're right. This one is, it's a challenging read, difficult read. And what kind of happens to the Eric and Lara, like seeing their relationship and kind of what happens when they get to Pulpero. And I did certain scenes, I was kind of imagining what it would be like if I had lost my child, just to kind of get the kind of gut wrenching kind of feel about it. And
just to torture yourself.
Just give myself.
I remember we approached this before when we talked to you, and you did say that sometimes you get in these dark areas that they do take a big toll on you.
That was with
that particular scene, I think Tome too. That one scene in Tome said you really freaked yourself out.
I freaked myself out in Tome. Yeah, but like, it's strange. Like they say write about what you know, don't they? And I don't know about that, but I put myself in the situation that I tried to kind of imagine it, and it is just soul crushing. Like losing one of my girls. Like, I'm like, that would be the kind of worst thing in the world. And then just trying to kind of get the kind of words for it.
Right.
Chad talking about the feathers. And it's just, Yeah, I just enjoy kind of putting myself through torture, really, writing. Just like, imagine the worst thing possible, Ross, go on, and then sit here and trying to write it, like crying.
Right. Your next book would be all about rainbows and unicorns and all this stuff, just to
bookends. I can probably guarantee it won't, but yeah. Unless a unicorn rainbow thing goes rabid and kills a family and I don't know, something like that. But anyway. But Chad's comment is really funny because he read a really early copy of the book. I think I remember this right, but he just finished reading it. And in the book, there's some type of thing about feathers. And he just finished reading it. And then like a feather fell down like when he'd finished. And he was just like, what the hell? Like, come on.
Freaking out.
He was like, I'm checking out. But yeah, like Chad's read it, he loved it, and you know, I was very grateful for the kind of blurb he sent. And Chad is awesome, and I've just finished reading his new book, Three Smile Mile. Just phenomenal. If you've not read it, like Chad is going in new directions and it is still absolutely incredible. But yeah.
You had a different title for this one initially, right?
Yeah, initially
like a working title or something that you changed.
Yeah, initially it was called Hostage.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
And I've since however long it was I was last on the show, had interest with this in kind of possible adaptations and stuff like that. And in those kind of conversations, it was mentioned that the title, not it wasn't problematic, but they said that there's lots of books and films and other kind of like shows, stuff that have hostage in the title. And it was kind of like, you know, have you got anything else? And I was like, well, I have the Devil's Pocketbook. And they were like, yes, that's the one. I was like, okay. So yeah, it's, I actually prefer the title, but like, I got really attached to Hostage and I was like, oh, I really like that. Cause of what happens in the book. But the Devil's Pocketbook is just,
Devil's Pocketbook definitely sounds more like a horror story than Hostage does.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, Priscilla. That's why you got to sometimes just kill your darlings. So like Devil's Pocketbook and like the look at that cover, like it's just like if you imagine just that just said Hostage across the top, wouldn't have the same feel.
No,
it will.
I like this one better.
yeah, it's much better. But yeah, it's just I sometimes just open my phone and pull up this photo and just stare at it. I'm just like,
is it not just your background on like your computer and your phone and everything?
Everywhere you go,
you got it tattooed on your forehead.
Yeah. On all my other stuff, I've got my children, so I'm just like, just because I torture myself while writing, I need to just remember that they're still here. I'm like, yeah, they're still here. Okay.
Should we read Chad's blurb? Should we just like read that really quick? I've got it up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Go on. Go ahead.
All right. So this is from Chad Letsky. The allure to keep reading was almost concerning. There's magic in these words. Good luck putting it down.
Oh, magic. Yeah. That's kind of what you're talking about, Andrew. Some of it felt sort of magical for you, too.
Yeah. That's exactly right. Yeah. Very cool. Yeah.
So and you got
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, because, someone, I can't remember who it was talking about writing and soundtracks and like what people listen to if they listen to music or whatnot. And the whole time I was writing this, I just listened to Midnight Mass, the official soundtrack, on repeat.
It's an amazing show, Jay, right?
Does Jay not like it?
No,
it was like
anything that's good.
It was three episodes too long. What? They could have wrapped it up. They could have wrapped it up in four episodes.
Unbelievable! Just think of all those monologues, Jay. Come on,
I know.
But yeah, no, the soundtrack to that is amazing. It kind of helped me keep the same kind of vision for the book all the way through because I just listened to it on repeat. And there's like the soundtrack has these kind of really hymnal. Like weird hymnal kind of songs through it as well, and then they'd just pop up in places. And then whenever a certain song came on, like the candle lit vigil that they kind of walk down the street and get to the church, like whenever I heard that when I was writing, I could just picture that scene. But then now, when I finished writing the book, because I must have listened to it hundreds of times, I now picture the part in the book that I was writing whenever that bit happened. It's quite weird, but
nice.
And like before, I never used to listen to any music, but I think this was really the first book that I started doing that, and it really helped.
Was there a certain reason you decided to listen to music for this one, as opposed?
I blame Josh Malerman.
It's all his fault.
It's all his fault. But I tried it with Juniper, like when I first started writing, mm-hmm. and I was listening to John Denver because I like John Denver, and I was listening to John Denver, and I was writing the book, and I was like sitting down, and I was like, yeah, this is getting wicked, and I was like reading back what I was writing, and I was like, this is just incredible, Ross. Like, you are going to win the awards for this. And then I realized I'd just written the lyrics to like Annie's song, and I was just like. So that's a delete it all. But yeah,
that,
I think
that right there, what you just said, that right there is my issue with audiobooks. So that right
there,
I don't know how writers can listen to music when they write, because I can't listen to audiobooks when I'm doing my work. And a lot of people do audiobooks when they're working, because my emails end up having what the narrator just said.
Exactly. It's so easy to do.
Yes.
And then like I was listening to Josh on a couple of podcasts, and he was talking about, and then we spoke about it, and he was like, you know, like he listens to soundtracks with no kind of words in, and I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, okay, I'll give that a go. Although, you know, Midnight Mass has some hymnal stuff, because it's quite dark and eerie, it kind of just carried on. But yeah, and then I've used that ever since to kind of like pick a couple of soundtracks to set the mood for what I'm writing, and then just listen to them on like random, but yeah, it works really well. But anyway, yeah. Sorry.
So do you think that's improved? I don't know if improved is the right word, but maybe helped with the writing process? Maybe you write quicker? Or
yeah, I think it's...
sort of atmosphere of it or whatever?
It helps me create a mood. And it makes the kind of... Instead of it just being I'm writing, it's more of this is a session. Like that sounds on in my office, and I've got the music on, and I'm just there, and it kind of just helps ease me into it, and then there's not just dead noise, like just silence. And although I used to love that, but like now I'm just kind of, it's weird, like I was always like, no, you're crazy if you write with music on, but now I'm just like, yeah, music, and it just eases me in, keeps the mood the same. Like if I step away for a couple of days and then come back, like it helps me get back into the mindset.
So what are plans in place for this to be an audiobook also then?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
100%.
Nice.
Yeah.
Already land a narrator for it, or
yes and
tell
no,
us. I don't want to ruin any surprises for later, but
well, you know, I just finished, I'm actually just in the process of mastering the audio for a gentleman who did the narration for Jack Harding's Ripper Country. And, you know, the gentleman that did it is absolutely incredible. I won't say too much who it is right now. I'll wait till we get it out. He's not very well known or anything, but he's an actor in the UK and he's just amazing. I think I had, Ross check it out and get an opinion on him, and he really liked him, but, Ross has since kind of dabbled into audio himself with the Juniper trilogy, so maybe we'll have somebody else. We'll see.
You never know. Well, Ross, being in the UK, would you want like a British narrator for it too, do another version of it, or does it matter? Because you said before we went on the air, when you were the way you wrote it, it's, you know.
Yeah, I personally think it needs to have an English person narrating it, just because it's set in England. And like in my head, I don't really listen to that many audiobooks, but in my head, if I was listening to an American talking about like an English town, like, I don't know, they might have a really good English accent. I don't know.
Right.
Like, I'm just saying, like, if they sounded American reading it, like, I would be a bit like, well, that's a bit weird because it's set in UK. But yeah, that's just my opinion. But you know, yeah, I'm just saying, like, if you're an American and you've got a brilliant English accent, crack on. But I'm just saying, like, for me, it's like
send your samples too.
Yeah, send your samples on.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I've been dabbling like Andrew said, like trying to get the Juniper books to audio as well. So, and like all my stuff, I've just found, like, yeah, I just put them all out there and said, like, send me your stuff. And it's been quite cool, like listening to people just read stuff. And like, I've got a woman who's reading Juniper, and it sounds incredible. I've got a guy doing Tome, and that is, when I heard him talk, I was just like, oh my goodness, this is brilliant. Like, I was like, he's nailed it, like the kind of accent and everything. I was just like, oh yes, this is giving me chills. And then I've got a couple lined up for Only the Stains Remain, and a guy who's doing Beautiful Atrocities, but he's really like, he's got like all the accents, like English, American, like different places in America as well. So like, for those stories in that collection that are set in America, like I've gone through it and said, this is UK, this is here, this is what. So he's going to do all these like variety of accents for it to make each story different. Nice. But yeah, like it's quite interesting. Like Andrew must have loads of fun, like doing all these auditions for people to get them in and see what they could do. But yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. I've been fortunate enough. I get to talk with guys like Thomas Gloom, and who's an awesome narrator, awesome writer, just a great community person. And, I bounce stuff off of him every once in a while. He's done some books for me, quite a few actually. And, he's a great kind of in that community. We've got Linda Jones working on, Caitlin's book. This is where we talk things out. So very fortunate with that. And actually I have another one. We're just waiting for the approval from the old Amazon with Rachel Ayoubi in Canada. She actually is an actress that appeared in one of the Star Wars TV shows. So that's kind of cool. Yeah.
Just immediately got Brad's attention.
I was going to say, you got Brad all excited.
I was completely zoned out, and they said Star Wars. I perked up.
Yeah. So, yeah, I love audio. I think it's important too. And, even if there's no money in it, which there is a little bit, I think it's just a way of accessing readers that we might not normally access, and garnering reviews, and just lots of good things come from audio. There's no harm in getting your work out there if you can. Right. So,
right. Yeah. Right. Just another avenue to get your story out there.
Right.
Just thinking about this cover here and looking at it, if there had to be one negative about it, all of your other covers are great. Okay, I enjoy your other covers, but now this is what's going to happen when this becomes the Dark Lit standard. This one, you're going to have every one of your authors saying, "Hey, I want my cover to be a Ross Jeffrey cover." It's got to be.
And I'm going to tell you something. Nobody does. Everybody's got like their own artist that they really, really want. Like Scott Moses, I said, like, who do you want? He's like, well,
his cover is fire, by the way.
Yeah.
The one for Scott J. Moses, it looks like a vampire movie cover, and it's dope.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't go into it like, if you could hire anybody, who would it be? I think
money's no option. Come on, just tell me who it is.
Yeah, I think Ross and I talked about the gentleman that does all of
Adam Neville's covers.
Covers. And that was not going to happen. the artist there literally has like, you have to go like through an interview process, and he's very particular about who he even takes on. So it just wasn't something that I could even do. But when we were shopping around anyways, yeah, it was kind of funny. But then, Caitlin Marceau, she'll always say Christina NW Readers.
Right.
It is like must have for her. Lore had somebody in particular. Same with Zach Ashford. He had somebody very particular for his book that he wanted. And I'm really excited for that one too, by the way. That one's a little ways away yet, but it's going to be cool. So
Renato kind of had.
You also got Tyler Jones.
Yeah, his is in the works too. And like I said, Ryan Mills is his guy. Like, yeah, that's who he wants to do his covers. And so let's do it. Like, it's not my job to, you know, I can steer the writer in a direction that I might, right, you know, want. Like, I want Christina to do a cover because I really like working with her. But, you know, it's your book, and it's just my job to try to bring it to life and get it on a shelf, right? So that's what I try to do, and I do my best to, you know, to get the cover that the author wants. So,
Ross Ronaldo kind of has a question for you. He says, "I really need to pick Ross's brain. Definitely got to know stuff like whether he's experienced imposter syndrome, and if so, how he deals with it. He seems so confident in everything he does."
Pump your chest a little bit. Go ahead.
Ross is like, absolutely never.
No, not my dad.
Don't you know I'm a Bram Stoker Award nominated author, Ed? Of course.
Yeah, it's really funny. Like, and I think about this a lot, and I don't. It's really difficult to answer because I know people suffer from it, and they say it quite a lot. And like I do, you know, as a, you know, I've got a few books out and stuff, and like I never think to myself that I shouldn't be where I am. I'm really nervous about this one. Like, I'm nervous about a book because it's a book coming out. Not I'm nervous that I'm, you know, I'm worried what people are gonna kind of think, or do I deserve the opportunity that I've been granted? And so what I'm trying to say is I don't really think that imposter syndrome is a thing. Mm-hmm. I think it's how you look at it and how you as a person are. Like, I'm a confident individual. I'm quite quiet and shy, and I don't really do, you might not think that, but I am quite quiet and shy, and I'm quite reserved. But with regards to my writing, I write the books I want to read. I write the books that I want to write. And if, like, at the end of the day, if I'm happy with it, there's nothing to be worried about or feel like mm-hmm. I'm an imposter, because it's the book I wanted to write. Like, for instance, there is a book that will be coming out sometime later next year, where I was kind of worried about it, but not because I was like fearing imposter syndrome or anything. It was just, it is probably a book that will probably ruffle some feathers, but mm-hmm. it's the book I wanted to write, and it's a story I wanted to tell. And yeah, I believe in it. And it's just being confident, I think, in what you've written and what you've done. And, you know, when I did start out, and, you know, like the most I've ever felt imposter syndrome, if I use that as a phrase, is probably with Scorched, like the third book in the Juniper trilogy, because I'm like, it could either be really good or I've absolutely ruined the trilogy.
No pressure at all, right?
But no pressure at all. Like, you know, the second book won a Bram Stoker, was nominated for a Bram Stoker Award. So then I'm like, the third book's got to be really good, Ross. And then obviously crap's happened with that, and, you know, they were with the publisher, and then they just let them go. But that was the first time I ever wrote a book to a deadline, because mm-hmm. they said we're buying all three books, we want it done by him this time, go and write it. And I in my mind, I wasn't ready to write the book that quickly. So that was the only time I was sitting down. Like, I love it. Like, the finished product is, I'm just waiting for the final edits, but like, I'm glad how it all ends and kind of all that kind of stuff. But that's the only time I've kind of really thought, what are you doing, Ross? Like, yeah, what are you doing? Because all the other ones, I've just written the book and just been, okay, I'm writing in my own time. I don't have any other kind of outside pressure. Just when I've done, I'm done. But this one, it was just like, I was sitting down, I was like, oh my goodness, like, I've got to get this done in like 6 weeks. And then I'm like typing away. And then my granddad died during that period as well. And I was kind of like, oh man, like, wrong time, granddad. but then I was like, cracked on, like, did it, had a little bit of an extension because of that and stuff. And then I was like, okay, handed it in. And then they kind of well, it wasn't because of that they rejected it, but they kind of said, we're not doing any of the books anymore. So I was like, okay. And then I've since then gone back through it and kind of made it tighter and better. And mm-hmm. But this is a long ramble to say that I don't feel an imposter syndrome. I'm just confident in what I've written. And I think that comes with time. Like, you know, I haven't been writing long, but, you know, I've got 6-7 books, a few more written that haven't been picked up yet. But I think it's just having confidence in your own ability. And yeah, like, you know, I think I may have originally, when I heard that phrase, because I was new to writing, be like, oh yeah, imposter syndrome. Yeah, I'm suffering from that. But it was because I didn't really know where I fit or where I fit in. And and I stay out of all the drama and all that rubbish on Twitter and all that. I just keep myself to myself. And yeah, so yeah, I don't know. It's cool. Like, you know, I've got lots of people in the chat here that are supporting me. And like,
yeah, I was going to say, not to dwell on that, not to turn this into a regular Paper Cuts episode, because this is a special one. But don't you think that you have developed a good enough fan base that, let's just say, by chance, Scorch doesn't end up being what you want it to be? Don't you think, though, you have a fan base that will still support you for it and still stay behind you? You know,
yeah.
Stephen King has some rough ones out there, but he's got such a fan base, it doesn't matter. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I think you have that fan base, you know? So
yeah, and I also want to say that Scorch is brilliant.
I'm sure.
Jay's like throwing these negative jabs today.
Jay's like, one negative about the cover. Look,
I'll play devil's advocate because we're talking about the devil's pocketbook here, okay?
But yeah, no, like, Scorched is now, it's brilliant. The editor's doing a brilliant job on it. And I love how I've ended it. Or have I? Interesting. And
drop a big yell, Jay. See, he agrees with me. The fan base is strong. So,
but yeah, like, you know, I am not. What's the word? I'm blown away and humbled by the amount of people that read me, this kind of awkward Brit, and like stick around and have read all my stuff. Like, when people message me and be like, oh, I've read everything you've written, it's really, really good, when's the next book? I'm like, oh wow, okay, like, this is happening. And like Heidi in the chat, like, she's just read, I think, pretty much everything that I've done and says such lovely things about it. And it just, yeah, it's just weird. Like, for me, you know, I only started writing kind of properly during COVID, and that's when I wrote Juniper, and then just wrote from then on. And I think it's, yeah, like, surround yourself with cool people. Like, surround yourself with people that aren't, you know, it's all cool sending stuff to your friends and saying, read this, and then they come back and they're like, oh, it's brilliant. But you want people that aren't going to blow smoke up your ass as well. Like, ones that you can send it to and be like, can you read this and let me know? Like, for me, like, that's, like, Tyler Jones, like, I sent him a bit of my, like, next book that's going to be coming out, and he was like, yeah, it's okay, but do you want to change this chapter to this chapter and then maybe do this and do that? And I was like, no. I was like, but knowing what he writes and like how much I love his work, I'm like, you need to listen to these, some people, like, some people you don't. And it's just the case of like learning how to do that. But
to have you two on there together.
So yeah, like when Tyler spoke to me about that bit, I was like, okay, I can kind of see what you mean. And then I did it and then read that bit and I was like, oh yeah, like, that's, you know what you're talking about. But yeah, I can't remember what the question was, but yeah.
I'll dive in on that, because Ronaldo, I know a little bit about your writing, dude, and I love it. So don't worry about, you know, don't doubt yourself, man. If you guys don't know, Ronaldo's story is in one of my beach vacation horror books. Nice. I think your work is great, man. I like the cultural aspect to it too. So, and I think readers really want that. So keep working at it, keep writing, don't stop. And know that there's people like in our space that want to read your stuff. So just keep working, man.
He's in Beachbodies, right? Is that the one I saw him in?
Yeah, I do think it's Beachbodies, yeah.
I get two mixed up, yep.
He has a really cool story in that. Like, I didn't even have to finish reading before I knew I wanted to be in the book. And, like, I curated all the stories in it. I'm not exactly an editor, right? But Ben insisted on having me on the cover because although he edited the work, I chose all the stories to kind of work together in that. But yeah, like I knew instantly I wanted to have that story in there because I think he's a very unique voice, and I think he brings a different kind of story that readers really want. So
So as we start to wind down with the special cover reveal here, Ross, why don't you sell it to us? We see the cover. Why are we buying this? Why are we getting? Why are we just throwing money at Darklit and bring it with all these special with this nice hardcover, fancy cover?
Okay, like, because if not, he will kill you, Jay. That's the only.
Yeah. If you don't buy it,
he knows where I live.
He's no longer on the show. I would say this is my best book to date. I would say the themes of it are challenging, rewarding, terrifying. Also, it's kind of has kind of elements of folklore in it as well, mythology. There are some scenes in it that scared me when I was writing it. Darklit are brilliant, so you should buy all the stuff that they ever release. It's just a unique story. And I think people will really, really enjoy it. Look at that cover. Like that, you just buy that cover. You just buy that book for the cover. Oh, like, come on.
You know what?
You don't even read the book. You just get the cover.
Just buy it.
In the background in our videos, Brad. We're just going to get that.
We'll get the green screen. We'll just have that as the background for every episode.
You know,
little Paper Cuts Live logo in the bottom corner.
Yeah.
We can say a lot of things, but we could also let Josh Mallerman sell it for us.
Oh, we could. Yeah.
Got a blurb from your buddy.
All right, here we go. Yeah. Josh Mallerman. You will grieve the grief in the devil's pocketbook. You will bear the hope. You will discover, too, cruel wonder in a pod in a rocky bay. Even as you think, get away. Ross Jeffrey is the two things you long for most in an author of horror. First, he is fearless. Second, he's giving you, the reader, all that fear instead.
Nice. Ross, how much did you pay Mallerman for that one?
There you go.
Well, I can't like can neither confirm or deny those reports.
It depends on how much he makes on his book.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's crazy. Like for me, I treat each book like this is a little game I play, but I treat each book like I'm collecting Panini stickers. and I'm always like, right. Who is an author that I absolutely love that I would love to get a quote from? And then and then I just kind of contact them. And also anyone who is, you know, up and coming. I think I'm still up and coming. I'm not arrived, you know what I mean? But like, be nice to people. Like, don't be a dick. That is what I'm going to say. Like, be nice to people, be courteous to people. Like, you know, engage with the community you are trying to be part of. You know, I've done this... Well, I don't know now. About 11 years, I've been kind of working with authors, like when I did stuff with Storgy, and then now as a writer as well. And like the connections you make, and if they are honest, you know, true connections with people, is the best way to be. And you know, don't do it. Like, I can't remember, don't do it for a favor later on. Like, just support people. Like, it's not kind of transactional. You know, the most, I spend most of my time promoting other people than I do my own books, which probably Andrew will have a go at me. But, but like, even my newsletter, I spend most of that talking about other people's work. And, you know, I just love the community that I'm in, and I do all of that. And you know, some of the blurbs I've got from people for my books are because, you know, I've, you know, been friends with them for a while, and I've supported them, and then I've just said, oh, by the way, I've got this book, would you mind reading it? And you know, and also sending them a nice email instead of just a DM being like, read this, send me some words. But yeah, it's that, and I think that's something that's lost on quite a lot of people. You know, I get a lot of requests for reading books and providing blurbs, and I can't read everything as well, and also because I'm writing so much, I can't do as much as I want to. But if you send me a nice email and it's written nicely and you're courteous and polite, I'm more than likely to read the book because you've acted appropriately. But yeah, it's just crazy. And then like, yeah, Malamon kind of given that blurb, like I was very honored to have it. Like he is one of the best, one of my favorite writers, like everything he writes I get. And I was fortunate enough to write a book alongside him a couple of months ago. And that was incredible. And I can't really believe where I am and who I talk to. And like, it's just madness.
And it doesn't hurt to send like a bottle of wine with the book.
Yeah. Exactly. The bribery works well. As well.
So we're looking at May of 2023 for a Devil's Pocket book.
Yeah.
Ross, congratulations. Cause that cover's awesome. And you know, I'm about 45% through. So, I mean, it's freaking awesome.
Oh, thank you very much.
Brad, yeah, just I like Chad's UK-isms. He's trying to talk there.
Yeah.
Tie your knickers in or not.
Read it while I tie your knickers in or not.
Final thoughts, everyone.
I'm going to name some of the people who've blurbed it. Kev Harrison's blurbed it. Laurel Hightower, Eric LaRocca, Josh Mallerman, T.C. Parker.
It's like a who's who.
Chad Lutsky. All those people. Oh, those are the ones I have, the blurbs I have. There might be more, but that's a good list of people to have blurb in your book.
Yeah.
The first chapter is just blurbs.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. but yeah, no, Andrew's got kind of people lined up and stuff. And like, it's incredible. Like when I think two of those people are like New York Times bestselling authors. Like I'm like, wow, that's pretty impressive. But yeah, it's incredible. Like, you know, everybody, like when I'm sure Andrew will do it and I will do it as well. But like, if you can add this when it's on Goodreads to your Goodreads to be read and all that kind of stuff, like your support would be much appreciated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll be doing some giveaways and stuff to, you know, get some books out to readers early. And I'm hoping to get a pre-order up here soon. Just once I get the formatting finished here. So, but yeah, we'll be able to get rolling on things and, yeah.
So how thick of a book is this? Is this your biggest book? Is it bigger than Tome? Is it the biggest book you've released so far?
As in page count?
Yes, page count.
Yeah, it might be a little bit bigger than Tome, I think. But it reads really fast. Like even I wrote it and I'm like, when I'm writing it, rereading it for edits and stuff, I'm just lose myself in it and then I'm kind of halfway through. There's not much preamble. It's just kind of bang. I think it's the biggest book I've written. I think the next one after that might be a little bit bigger, but I'm not doing like Ghoulin the Cape or whatever.
Each one's getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah, yeah. Just keep
going. There's some good meat to the story is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Beefy.
Beefy.
There you
Your
have
next
it.
One's that's, you're doing the LaRocca, the LaRocca titles. They just get longer and longer and longer.
So I say everyone copy this cover now and just spread it all over Twitter. Now that we see the cover of it.
Yeah, go wild with it. It's now out in the world. Just go nuts.
Yeah. Let's go for it.
Yeah.
All right. This has been great. Ross, Andrew, both of you, thank you so much for stopping by. And we appreciate the fact that you want to do this on our show. So we should, you know, thank you for that. Two dopes for microphones. I mean, I'm sorry, we're called Paper Cuts. But there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. There's the big reveal, the big cover, the May of 2023. Cover. That's what you have to look forward to. Ross, congratulations. Yeah, Andrew, congratulations for getting this from Ross and
yeah, very exciting. Cool. And I appreciate you guys letting us be on here too. Like this, I mean, you guys are thinking us, but I mean, really, all the thanks goes to you guys for allowing us to do this on your show. Like we get an opportunity to reach your audience, and I'm very very grateful for it. So thank you.
Thanks.
We appreciate it. Just don't say too much, though. Jay's head will just get bigger.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, the screen's not big enough for
the show. The Grinch's heart grew. Jay's head grew three sizes that day.
Yeah, and I echo Andrew's thoughts as well. And just thank you guys for kind of having me back and talking about it and all your support. Like off this, and you know, all the people that turned up in the chat as well, just thank you so much. And yeah, let's make this a bestseller. Let's go.
Yeah, we had to have you guys on because, you know, we're trying to compete with some of the bigger, more popular shows. I'm kidding. Okay, that's enough. We're done. It's a wrap. This is the cover. Everyone in the chat, thanks so much for stopping by. Really appreciate it. And then, of course, everyone who watches this later, because we'll replay it several times. For Ross, for Andrew, Dark Lit Press. I tell you what, I have a stack of stuff I'm going to just go going through. I'm going to add this one to it. A lot of great things. Yeah. So again, thanks
more's
so much
for coming, by. More is just going to keep coming. So.
That's right.
Brad, final thoughts. This is our last one for the year, right?
Last show for the year.
And it was Merry Christmas, everyone. Merry Christmas.
I'll miss you, Jay. Yeah. Ross, you have to show off your jumper real quick, just for.
Oh yeah. So I was wearing this for Brad's kind of.
Ross dressed up for me today. It's got the Jay loves Star Wars. Yes.
There we go. I was like, I got to dress up for Brad. You know, when you have like the Tyler Jones on here, he's wearing like a 3-piece suit. I'm just wearing it.
He is, isn't he? Yeah. Yeah, but the ratings just dropped because of Star Wars on there. So, all right.
Oh, no.
That's it.
Ross, Andrew, appreciate you guys coming on. Appreciate you allowing us to reveal the cover to the world for this passion project for Ross that he's been working on for a long time. I know he's really excited about it. So, thank you for giving us the opportunity to do the reveal for you guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
That's it. Everyone, see everyone next year. Thanks for
having me. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to everybody.
Bye.
Jay, I love you, Jay.
I know you do.